Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Friday, June 23rd edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on the show today. We're going to talk about the stress test we had yesterday. We're in day four now of this little biotech rally. Even VRX got going yesterday. We're going to talk about that. Twitter showing signs of life and a couple of earnings to discuss. Our guest today, relevant considering the Qatar investment in American Airlines. We're going to be talking with Frank Holmes. He's the He runs the Jets ETF, also has a new gold ETF we're going to discuss as well. That'll be at 8:35. Joel, how's it going with the S&Ps this morning?
We're up 0.75 points, Spencer, at 2432.50. Pre-market high, 36.75. Got a big number on the downside for you, folks. 24.28, matching lows from Wednesday and Thursday. Crude holding in there in the 42 handle, made a low yesterday at 42.26, trying to bust into the 43 handle. 43.09 is the current high. Gold up 860, clearing that 1250 level, and silver up 22 pennies, not quite up to 17 at 16.73. Dennis, how you doing this morning?
Not too bad. Just trying to get some software working, a few technical glitches, but I'm here and I'm ready to do some talking stocks and do some trading.
All right. Well, we're going to have to really chat it up today because it looks like we're a little light on the news.
Never light on the news. Or we're never at least light on the chatting. We always can chat.
So we're going to need some help.
And the chat can chat too.
The chat can chat too. All right, we're gonna get some. We're gonna get some tickers out of here, out of Michelle K and Pedro RD Z Modem. They're all gonna give us some symbols to look at today.
Yeah, and in the meantime, we've got some symbols for you to look at too. Let's get to our couple of earnings reports here from this morning and from last night. Big one this morning, BlackBerry, BBRY, and it's starting to get hit, although it's coming back from the lows. And they came out with just earnings here this morning. And Spencer, what are the details?
Actually, my laptop just crashed, so I don't have the numbers in front of me. So.
No details.
I'm sorry. What's wrong with you? My laptop crashed at like 7:59.
All right. I'm going to my trusty Benzinga Pro and typing in BlackBerry earnings. And, of course, I'm actually in ratings changes, so I've got to go over to the news. And it's not working for me here either. Okay, here we go. BlackBerry reports 2 cents. It's from the trusty Benzinga Pro. 2 cents versus 0 cents. Same quarter last year. $244 million in sales. They reaffirmed their fiscal year 2018 outlook. They also announced a 31 million share buyback. But, stock is down 50 cents on this news. 558,000 shares have traded. Joel, tell us about the pre-market action.
I'm telling you, I'm surprised it traded 986 there, Dennis. You must have been away from your computer.
986? It's these things on earnings, eh? Soil liquid, now it's starting to leak here again, but that seems like an overshoot.
Yeah, $10 psychological level. Since you hit that 985, though, you got a little bounce up to 1065. Close way up at 1106, so I'll just look at that 1065 right now, the rebound high as a possible level. That gets you into yesterday's range. Really, what you got to do is you got to get over the quad of low, more than a quad of low, five lows between 1044 and 1065. Let's call it 1050, the big level to get back. Coming back on the downside, you might have missed your chance to buy it in double digits today, the lower 10 handle. So I think you'll see some bids, all the way down back to that low, even if you get near, though. I wonder what Mr. Left is thinking on this one. I mean, he had the big call on this, got the absolutely.
What did he say on BlackBerry? I forget.
Oh, he said BlackBerry was like the next NVIDIA.
And when did he say that?
Oh, Dennis. Have you been?
Are you sure you didn't dream that up? I don't remember
Spencer,
that.
Spencer, will you help me,
was
please?
Was I away that day? Maybe I was away that day. There was 2 days that I missed in the last year. It must have been on those days. I don't.
I vaguely remember that.
You guys. Oh, my God.
Okay, Chad, can you confirm, or did Joel join
us? No, he did. For real, he did, though. He did.
Do we know when? Was that one of those gaps?
June 1st at 12:08.
What was I doing June 1st, 12:08? I see the big spike up in the chart.
Yeah, he made a bold claim. Notable short seller, positive report on BlackBerry. A firm he compared to the next NVIDIA.
Wow.
2-year value pop from $5 billion to $85 billion. Largely reflect potential source in non-niche markets.
What? No, stop. He was saying you could go to $85 billion?
That's what I'm reading it wrong. That's what NVIDIA did. But he's saying...
BlackBerry? Why did he say BlackBerry? You got to enlighten me here, Joel, because I didn't read about this on June 1st.
Okay, are you ready? I'm very surprised.
Give me like the 20-second version. And the cut down of this note. What did he say?
Cars and things. Breaking into new markets through its Internet of Things. Okay. Radar assisted tracking.
So it's BlackBerry?
Spencer, can you slap him for me, please?
Well, no, because he's way up north in Canada. I can't reach that far.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Cars and things, Internet of Things, the parallels to BlackBerry are compelling, given its market-leading automotive installed base, its IP portfolio, its background in secure computing. It's having quenched its cash burn and added a fresh $1 billion in cash for R&D. BlackBerry isn't going away. That's what he said.
Wow. That's interesting. So, well, it's not going away here this morning, too. Already bouncing back. And, you know, the stock, you know, let's say, in 2017, it's been hot. You can look at the chart here. Started the year down right around $7, doing nothing. Took off in March and went from 7 to 12, basically, in the course of a month there, March and April. And, you know, so now you look at it here, and it's one of the stronger performers. You get a pullback here this morning. I think just from a technical basis, I think it finds buyers.
Yeah, and also this dip under 10, I'd love to try and get it near the $10 level. So we'll see. But, a big call by him. And so far, it's about at the place where he was when he initially made the call.
Okay, jump back over here to other earnings, and let's go to Bed Bath & Beyond from last night. The triple BY, not double BY, Joel, triple BY. You always put too few Bs or too many Bs.
Nope.
You did it right this time. Down 10%. Well, it's a retailer, so it has to be down 10%, right? Spencer, what are the details?
They reported. there we go. Sorry.
This is
yesterday.
For enlightening us
this is yesterday after the bell. GAAP EPS of 53 cents that may not compare to the 66 cent estimate. Sales of $2.74 versus $2.79 billion.
Stock getting hit here this morning. Triple BY, BBRY is getting hit. BBBY is getting hit. Don't have two Bs or B and a Y in your ticker here. But anyway, stock was hanging out right near the lows. They were selling it ahead of the report. They're selling it after the report. It's just, you know, a retailer. The retailers are just in shambles here right now. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough to report, period. Even if you're beating the numbers, they're hitting you. And then when you're missing the numbers, they're hitting you, too. So, I don't know. It's just tough to be any retailer except Amazon.
33.74 is where you went off the board. Really didn't get much of a move up. In fact, you went straight down. And you went straight down all the way to 29.20, Dennis. And then you got a little pop up. I'll give you a resistance on this one. It's a little bit easier. 31.30. That's been the highest level since you made that 29.30 low. So not looking for any major upside until you could clear 31.30. Now you're coming back. Maybe you missed that pre-market low at 29.20. You got a psychological level like 30 where you may see some institutional bids. But where are we at? We are back at levels here that we haven't been under 30 since, the financial crisis, or a little bit after. 29.13 was your low in July 2009. So the stores are too big. I don't like them.
You get lost in them.
You get lost. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
this is one of those that they make you go through the maze. You know, you got to start and follow the whole path through, and, you know, and then you go through towels and you go through more towels and then you go through cat stuff, like just random cat stuff. And I don't know. I've been through the store a couple of times and I don't think I've ever bought anything there before. Maybe my wife has, but I'm not a big fan of it.
My favorite Bed Bath & Beyond moment is from the movie Click, when he goes to the back of the store and he goes to the Way Beyond section. He goes way beyond. You don't want to know what's way beyond.
Was there some crazy stuff in the Way Beyond section?
Yes. No, they didn't even shoot that's the point of the movie.
Way Beyond.
They're good. We always get like 20% coupons there.
Stuff at Bed Bath & Beyond?
Like, you know, you clean the dishes with, you know, the scrubbers, if I break that or something.
Mine's at a dollar store.
No.
Like 20 bucks at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Like Emily, you know, going up to school and stuff, you know, get her some cheaper cookware and stuff. So, yeah, I do a little shopping there.
Okay, you got to start doing more because the stock's in trouble and the company seems like it's in trouble there too. Let's move on here. Sonic Hamburger Joint, SONC. Was it down more? What did it do? Well, Spencer, give us the details and then we'll jump into the after hours action.
Yeah, I like Sonic. They reported Q3 EPS 43 cents versus 41 cents. Sales of $123.99 versus $126 million. So a miss on the sales, but a 2 cent beat on the EPS. Comps were down 1.2%. They also reaffirmed their outlook for the fiscal year.
Joel, talk about the after hours action.
Whoosh, down to 25.16.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it down.
Yeah.
Down now.
Now back up here, finding some sellers, maybe some sellers and some buyers here, hanging out at the $27 level. So I'll see if we can clear 27. What do you got to do to fill the gap from yesterday? Oh, right there too, 27.31 and 27.50. So I think the best thing possible, if you're long this thing, is to see it go green and stay green on the session. But I don't know, a lot of people here that were long at the former low of the move, maybe getting, trying to wiggle out. But I'll tell you one thing, those commercials where they show that pretzel dog or whatever, their pretzel bun, have you ever seen a commercial with less appealing food on it in your entire life?
I don't know the commercial you're talking
about. Do you know what I'm talking about, Spencer?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Is that the least appealing food you've ever seen on a commercial in your life?
I don't know if it's the least. I don't know if it's the least. It's not good. It's not good. But you haven't been to Sonic, have you? I have.
I've only been there once, and I ate off the value menu, and it wasn't good. But don't eat off the value menu is what they tell me. So I'm going to give it a second chance. One of these times I'm going to go over there to a Sonic, give it a second chance, and not going to order off the value menu, although that's my thing. When I go to a fast food restaurant, I always order off the value
menu. I was going
to
say...
I'm the value investor. I'm the value menu guy, too.
I was going to say, but that's a life lesson. Don't order off the... That applies everywhere. Don't order off the value menu.
Awesome. The McDouble? Are you kidding me? The McDouble? I live for those. The McDouble's awesome. It's basically the same amount of meat that you get on a quarter pounder, except you pay half the price. They give you a little bigger bun on the quarter pounder and a couple bigger onions.
Does it?
Total way to go at McDonald's. Doesn't
Warren Buffett go to McDonald's every day and get like a sausage McMuffin or something?
He drinks six Cokes a day. He does drink six Cokes a day, and that's his longevity there. Drinking six Cokes a day keeps him all sugared up and energized.
Ready to go.
He said
sometime.
He drank six Cokes a day. Man, I did an experiment back in grade eight. It was like my science experiment, and it was just on plants and and basically giving them drinks. So I fed one plant water. I fed one plant coffee. I fed one plant beer. I had to get that from my dad, obviously. I had one plant. I fed apple juice or something. I fed all six plants something different. The pop plant was like annihilated. Like, man, the one I fed Coke to, there was not even any leaves. There was nothing. After 30 days, there was nothing left of that plant. It was basically ashes. The beer one actually did okay. The water one obviously did the best. But, I mean, that was the science experiment, what to feed plants. I was very creative when I was a kid. But I remember the Coke one, and it was just annihilated. So impressive that Buffett can drink six Cokes a day and still I'd be doing well at 80 years old or however old he is.
And what about that movie Supersize Me? Remember that back in the 2000s?
Great film. Fantastic
that
movie.
That almost like McDonald's stock. That was the low. When that movie came out, everybody was selling McDonald's stock. It went down like Go back to the charts. Can you go back that far? It was like 16 or 18 bucks the stock got down to. Because I remember, and I was like, I don't know, man. People are moving away from fast food. Wow, that was a wrong call. It was like as bad as your dad's call saying back in 1960 McDonald's wouldn't make it. But I remember it got way down there because of the Supersize Me. And then it obviously that was the low, and it's been straight up ever since that movie. Straight up.
It must have been in 2003 because that's when
it low. What price did it get to in 2003? The stock.
1388. No, 12
bucks. That was the movie. So they hit it. They kept hitting it that whole year on that movie. And people were saying, people watch this movie, they don't want to eat at McDonald's anymore. Well, they want to eat at McDonald's maybe that year, but they still sure as hell eat at McDonald's because look at this stock now. And McDonald's has some healthy choices on the menu now too. So you don't have to just go in there and eat your McDoubles all the time. Although that's what I like to get. And the 99 cent ice cream cone.
All right. Finish line. Did we have earnings from Finish Line?
Yeah, we did.
How'd they do?
Yes, we did. Finish Line. Also, a fan of since from my time working my in college worked at Macy's and there's always the Finish Lines at Macy's, so I have a soft spot in my heart for Finish Line. Q1 adjusted EPS 23 cents is in line with the estimate. Sales of $429.8 versus $432.9 million, so they missed that number by $3 million. Comps down 1.1%. They see their fiscal year 18 EPS coming in lower than the estimate. The estimate was $1.26. The EPS guidance is $1.12 to $1.23.
Shocking that a retailer disappointed.
someone's making a stand here though, Dennis, in the lower 12 handle. The 2-day low, the low of the move was 12.25. Your pre-market low is right there at 12.05 and 12.12. And then I went farther back on the monthlies here. You had a monthly low just under $12. When was that? I see 11. That's 11. 11.78 was your low in August of 2010. So, I mean, this thing already got tagged pretty good coming in, you know, before earnings, coming off the $15 level. So I'd be, you know, more apt to try and cover short than, you know, trying a long here. But $12 seems to be finding some buyers right now.
All right. Moving away from earnings here, let's move over to stress tests. And there was some stress tests out for the banks last night. You look at the banks, they're all doing pretty well because I believe, did they all pass the stress test, Spencer?
They all passed.
They all passed. And we're looking at JP Morgan train up 0.5%. Bank America's train up almost 1%. Citigroup's up 0.6%. Was there any highlights or anything? Did anybody like not do great but still pass? You know, like, you know, got like a 51 or something.
Well, the highlight is that there's a more important stress test next week that will be. This one was more so about capital requirements and having enough liquidity. Next week's is more about dividends, and that's the one that I think more people.
Oh, you like dividends.
I think that's the one that more people have their eye on. So this week,
right, so
this was
they're
good.
Gonna announce, you know, any dividend changes basically and. Is that what was happening next week?
I'm not entirely sure. But I know next week's, it's the 28th, I believe, and that's like the more important of the two.
Okay. Well, in any regard, on those stress tests, I was watching the action last night. Every bank was getting a lift. So not a huge lift, but they were all lifting. Like Citigroup was going up 20 cents. Bank America, like I said, was going up almost 1%. All the banks got a little bit of a lift last night on this. They're still holding those gains. So it's been muted activity since, but most of the banks are still trading in the green.
We have Bank America. I'll just do the technicals on that one. Lost 24 in a hurry, and now it's trying to find support at 23. Big hole number coming into play. You did get a lot of trading, but it just really struggling at like 23.14 area. So we'll look at it. I mean, we're still above the close and above the low. So let's see if it can garner some support here at the $23 area.
Look, Joel, I pulled the mute trick. I have never done that, I don't think, before.
I think you have. All right.
All right. Jump over to biotechs. And holy cow. I mean, they've been hot for 3 or 4 days. We've been talking about them. Yesterday, didn't it kind of almost feel like capitulation? I mean, every single biotech was just up enormously, you know. Well, actually, maybe it was the day before on a couple of them. But there was still a lot of movers yesterday, too, following through. It was like little ones yesterday. It's like, you know, I always say, after, you know, you've had the big leaders run, then they start to find all the garbage, and they start to find, you know, the ones that haven't run. Well, check out this. It had some news. The OvaScience. Remember that one, OVAS?
OVAS! Yes.
Yeah, it's back. Look at this candle from yesterday. Holy cow. They had some news, I guess, and they had some financing, or I don't know. They had something come out. Anyways, stock just blasts off into orbit yesterday. It goes from $1.50 up to $1.90. It's up another penny here today, but wow, that's a big move.
Dennis, didn't I tell you to short 10,000 of that at 50? Do you remember that when you were long?
I short 10,000 at $1.30.
No. you want to see another dog that came back and had a rally? Talk about the dogs of the dogs. Oh, yeah. VRX.
Holy cow, that candle in VRX yesterday. Wow. And you know what? I'm kicking myself because I felt, you know, yesterday morning you could see the biotechs were looking strong. So I bit a bunch of them. And I barely missed a whole pile of them. Like VRX, I like missed that by like a nickel. And then you bring it up and you're like, it's up $1. Now it's up another dollar. It was up almost $2 yesterday. What happened? Everybody just decided all of a sudden that Valiant's not going out of business and they got to get in right here, right now?
I think they were just combing the ditches, you know. I mean, a lot of the other big biotechs had already moved. This is a lower price stock. You can trade a lot of volume intraday. It actually opened up, you know, just a few pennies, and then boom, immediately caught support right under Wednesday's low. Wednesday's close, 1368, the low 1364, and then boom, the bots just came in, kept on buying, taking out offers all the way to 1573. That was your high, your 1550 close. You want to see a barrel through that 1573 and, you know, keep going into the 16 handle. Because really, I mean, it had a two-day rally, but the first, you know, the 1315 to 1368 really wasn't that much. So we'll see if VRX can get into the $16 handle.
Look at Gilead yesterday. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, from, you know, I won't say it on the show, but PI to Bliss. I mean, this thing has, you know, it's just been a rocket ship the last 4 days. 64, it's $71 here now. So this is one of those ones that doesn't have any growth and has been completely out of favor. Obviously, I own in my invest portfolio, so I like seeing it go up like this, but I'm looking at maybe cutting a loss in here somewhere because it's starting to seem like too much too fast.
Ah, 3-day move, actually a 4-day move, trading up in the pre-market though, Dennis. You're trading above, yesterday's high was 71.44. You haven't taken that out yet, so I don't know. I mean, you hold on to it, you know, this long, could form a little bit of a rounding bottom, Dennis.
I'm just telling you, man, there's this thing, it's just, okay, so, you know, I'm probably going to hold on to that, but would you be coming here buying it now? I mean, if you're $64, $71, you're talking a 10% move on basically no news in 4 days for a stock that has been completely out of favor. Now, all of a sudden, everybody loves it? I don't know. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it had to do, with the healthcare bill. And, you know, that was going around Wall Street, you know, or, you know, the Capitol yesterday. So, Dennis, it's just money rotation. You know, it's not like
you're right. And you know what? It is. That is a great point. It's just so, but when they rotate in there and they come in hard sometimes. I mean, they start jumping in and they just, you know, they've been coming into these biotechs for 3-4 days now with huge money. It's like these things can't even pull back. I mean, that Gilead is straight up. Imagine you're short the guy. Imagine, you know, you're saying, it's just going to continue to leak. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to cut the loss when it pulls back a little bit. There's been no pullback. That thing's straight up 10%. Like, that is like, look at the line from the last 4 days. Just go to like your whatever chart you got to use. There's like the most pullback in that thing is like 20 cents, 30 cents. Straight up. Well, I guess it's been $1 in there, but wow, that's a huge move.
Last Friday's low. I mean, actually, it gave, if you were keeping an eye at that 63.75 low, buyers stepped up to 64 on Monday and Tuesday. So it had a little bit of a chance to get in a lower risk. Now, if you're hopping in here long, man, it's hard. Where do you place your stop? Way down at yesterday's low.
Trade has left the station.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait for it to calm down, pull back, maybe get a 50% retracement of wherever this rally ends, maybe fill a gap 67-68. But I wouldn't mind looking at this one on a pullback, but not chasing it at this level.
Dr. J wants us to go to ratings land here, and there's some interesting ones. He's talking U.S. Steel. It did get an upgrade from Deutsche Bank. They also upgrade. Deutsche Bank's busy last night. They upgrade U.S. Steel. They upgrade AKS. They also upgrade CENX, which is Century Aluminum. They are downgrading Caterpillar. And they're upgrading restoration hardware. So they're all over the place here today. So they're upgrading a retailer, downgrading the cat, upgrading a bunch of steel. They initiated Biogen with a buy, you know. There you go. Late to the party, Deutsche Bank there. Although Biogen hasn't run nearly as much, but we don't always trust Deutsche Bank to be late to the party. Sorry, Deutsche Bank, if you're listening. BIIB, though, 283 here this morning. It's initiated buy. So basically all the major ratings changes are from Deutsche Bank here this morning.
Did they say anything about GE cutting its dividend?
I don't know. Spencer, did they say anything about GE last? Because you know what? Well, actually, the stock's been going down, so they're probably mute. It's only when GE goes up that they say, hey, by the way, we think they might cut the dividend. But, you know, speaking of GE, and, you know, we're going to go on a tangent here.
Gosh.
Wow. You know, that was a gift. CEO leaving, getting new CEO, big gap up. It only took a week. It fills the gap. The stock's completely out of favor.
Yeah.
I own it in my invest portfolio, too.
And I couldn't even hold the Julys in that one. It wasn't like I put any pressure on myself for a weekly. I had July 28 and a half, but oh well. Time to move on. What were
but
you said?
We were on. We started with U.S. Steel. That's what Dr. J was asking about. So he wanted to know the technicals. You know what?
This you is like
set.
It.
I mean, it's setting up now. I mean, that 20, you got an out. You know, so if you're coming here and, you know, do I want to chase up 2.5% today on Deutsche Bank? I don't know. They're off into fade. So I'm really picking on Deutsche Bank here. But it comes back down. Every time it comes down in the lower 20s, it's fine to buyers. So you know where the buy zone is, anywhere in the lower 20s. I mean, up here 21.65, eventually it might just go. So is it going to go today? Maybe. You know, maybe it's going to continue here. But in the low 20s, seems like low risk buy to me.
Yeah, based on the technicals, I mean, have you ever looked at the earnings reports for U.S. Steel? They are all over the place. I mean, huge misses and huge beats. Let's see. I don't even know how they do this. Last quarter, the estimate was for them to make 32. They lost 83. The previous quarter?
That was a gap down, apparently.
The previous quarter they were supposed to make 3, they made 27.
They just don't know how to give, you know, the analysts the feel for how they don't even know how their own business is running.
Here's another one. Q1 of 2016. They were supposed to lose $1.23, they lost $2.15.
Ooh.
I mean, I don't
They're
know.
They're kind of all over the place.
I mean,
but you know what? Okay, so let's just ignore it all. Ignore the fundamentals and just trade it technically there. I mean, this has been the area. Go out to the monthly charts. Every time this pulled back into the 20, I know in 15, 16, it really got low, got down to $6. But the buy zone's been between 18 and $20 with this thing in the last 5-6 years. Besides that little blip we had in 15, 16, still some pretty good support, 18 to 20. So, I mean, so your support's well-defined. You know, obviously 18.55 is the low of the move. I wouldn't want to give it that much, but you're starting to form a hard bottom at 20. So if I'm buying a 21, risking $1, you know, maybe eventually you do get a lift. There's some air above, there's some air below, but I'd say there's buyers in the 20 handle still.
I remember when you had this in your portfolio in September of 2014, and it got up to 46.55.
Yep.
I think that you sold it like in that out of your portfolio.
Like, yeah. I like got higher than the high on the chart because I sold it at the free market, I think, for my investment account. Yeah, I got out of it, you know, long term, and it was good. I was out, and then I watched it fall. I never got back in. Maybe I should get back in. Should I get back in?
To find risk, you know, right?
Please. I don't mind it. You know, Dr. J, I don't mind it here. I think I'm not chasing it this morning, but in the 20 handle, I kind of like it.
Oh, you know, speaking of dogs barking in your portfolio, did you hold on to that? Did you hold on to that CSIQ?
I still have it. Where is it?
Hey,
happy day for Denny. I didn't even realize last 2 days. It's funny, when you own 75 stocks, you don't even notice sometimes when one's taken off. So I don't, like this is my invest portfolio. I intentionally don't log. I log into it like once a week because I don't want to look at stuff because then I trade. So now you showed me this. Now I want to sell it.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
What happened? Why did it take off?
I just think it's just, you know, looking for dogs to buy, you know. I think I didn't see any
my portfolio dogs.
Well,
picking on me again.
You sold Apple to buy CSIQ.
I did do that. I did, and look, it's working for me because I sold the Apple at 140, like seven. I'm up 2 points from where I sold because it's down $2, and I bought the CSIQ at like I don't know, like 13 or something. So that's, it's working. Hey, I'm a genius. At least for now.
That's a great spread you got on there, but
I'm still long some Apple. So I only held sold half my Apple position, and I put the proceeds into Canadian Solar. I needed some speculative stocks in my portfolio, and you know why? Because Gordon gave it some love.
Yeah,
I follow that Gordon Johnson. I don't follow a lot of analysts. Gordon Johnson is one I follow. If you listen to Gordon, we love you.
All right, here we got about 4 or 5 minutes here before we bring on our first and only guest today, and he's a good one. He's Frank Holmes. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer over there at U.S. Global Investors. Frank's going to talk to us about the gold market. And you know what, Dennis? We didn't drill Gil. Did you? You know, when he said about what he had in his long-term portfolio about the gold. You know, all he had was gold. So we got to get him back on again. But he's going to talk about his gold ETF, and he's also going to talk about the airlines. He's an airlines expert. That's in another 4 minutes. Dennis, it balances on this sleepy Friday.
GE, 213,000 to buy. So that one actually is sizable there. And you can see GE actually trading up a nickel here in the pre-market. Just there to catch a little bit more. Well, actually, it hasn't done anything since that balance information came out at 8:30. Ford, 127,000 to sell. We may never settle that Ford bet, Joel. I think that's going to go on forever. Coke, 49,000 to sell. Twitter, 28,000 to sell. Holy cow, Twitter. You know, that's one to talk about, too, with the big move from the last couple of days. Alibaba small, 12,000 to sell. Square, SQ, 13,000 to buy. That's setting up a little bit. Let's talk Square.
All right.
Buy the resistance of $25. Just enormous up there. So, you know, until it gets through 25. That breaks out through 25. I might even buy that breakout. That 25 is huge. I'm waiting for 25, though. Got to trade 2501.
Dennis, what about ahead of that? I mean, you got three tops between.
Yeah, it's too much ahead of it. That's why I got to wait for 25.
Really? You won't want to try and play it through 2450 if it gets through there with a little bit of.
You know, you got the 25 looming up, though. So it depends on, you know, yeah. So for a day trade, yes. 2450 to 25, maybe. But for a swing trade, I'd rather see the full-on breakout over 25 now. Okay. Get 2501. Give me some tickets of 2501. Even give me a close over 25, and I'll get excited for Square.
Okay. All right, SQ. I mean, to me, I just see the triple top just under 2450. So, but, you know, looking different time perspectives here, but definitely a mound of resistance. And that's also the all-time high. Boy, this thing had a really good May. Went from 1824 in April to 2299 at the end of May, and then 2497, as Dennis mentioned, that's all-time high. Let's talk about Sean Udall's favorite stock here, Twitter. He won't give up, and I was looking at this thing on Wednesday, and I'm like, two-day move, and this was, I don't know, it's just saying coming back to life.
It was a mini two-day move.
Yeah.
I got a small 2-day move, but yeah, no, it's, you know, been bouncing, so it's getting some love here. But like we said, these types of stocks, it's the stocks, you're right, the dogs are barking everywhere. They're not only barking in my portfolio, they're barking in all these sectors. Because, you know, funny, you know, you got Twitter that we were talking about going out, you showed the Canadian Solar chart, we've been talking about Gilead, you know, all the biotechs are going. But it's a lot of stocks that have been quiet, you know, those value stocks. That's kind of what's been moving the last few days. So not that Twitter is a value stock, but it's a dog. So what about, okay, let's go look at the dogs. This will be the test. Fitbit, what's it doing? Oh, it's trying. But you know what? Maybe Fitbit. Maybe we should be looking at those. If you want to look at the dogs, GoPro, what about that one too? Ooh, there's two little sleepy dogs. What do you think about GoPro and Fitbit? Just trying them for trades. You got outs. I would say, you know, I'd get out. So if you're going to go the Fitbit setup, it's 5:05 here this morning. At 497, I'm out. That's the low for 490. Give it down to 490, which was the low from yesterday. And then let's look at the GoPro. Yeah, they got defined risk here too, Joel. Nice defined risk. Through 750, I'd be out. So if you're buying at 770 here this morning, I kind of like it. What do you think?
I think Lisa likes her Fitbit, and we are buying Dana's one for her birthday. So her birthday, she's turning a big 2.5. I'm going to be celebrating with her today. So there you go. Two L Conans buying the Fitbits.
And you know what else might be the sign just before? What? I came into my office this morning, and there was a Fitbit sitting on my keyboard. Not even joking, because I loaned it to my sister-in-law, and she came over, and I didn't even know she'd put it on my keyboard. So maybe that's a sign. Maybe the Fitbit was literally sitting on my keyboard. I think I got to buy Fitbit.
That is a sign. That is a sign of all signs.
The one thing, though, is you got to have an out, 490. So if it starts cutting through 490, I'm out. So if I do put this on today just because dogs are barking, I don't want to own it below 490. So buying if I'm buying 505 today, I'm getting out below 490. So that's my out. Swing trade. Only swing trade. I don't like it long term.
All right. Let's go grab Frank Holmes.
All right, welcome back, traders and investors. This has been Zynga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with Frank Holmes of U.S. Global Investors. He runs the JETS ETF and the new GOAU ETF, the Gold, Gold, and Precious Metal Miners ETF. Frank, how's it going today?
Very well, thank you.
So tell us, I guess it's good that we're having you on today, and we'll get to gold in a minute, but I want to ask you about this news yesterday that Qatar is buying a 10% stake in American Airlines. Can you talk about that and the implications for the airline industry there?
Well, that's a really a big change to see that take place, but I do know that the major airlines where they generate substantial profit margin on people flying from Europe over to America or from the Middle East. And historically, the Middle East planes went to Europe, and United Airlines, Delta, American, and those particular three airlines would pick up traffic coming into America. Well, what's happened with Qatar and Emirates is they fly right over Europe and land directly in America, and it's cut out a lot of revenue, high profit margin tickets for the major airlines. So I think this is like a strategic relationship, a Qatar going into America and America's gone into China.
And implications for maybe other airlines?
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's a good observation. You know, it's you're going to see the scramble to have this global connectivity for the world. And I think it's very positive and constructive. But I think it's also very interesting politically that Qatar can't fly. They've got no fly zone, basically, leaving Saudi Arabia in all this sort of drama's taking place. I think that this is a game changer.
And so what about, I guess, bringing up your JETS ETF here, what other big tailwinds do you see, headwinds or tailwinds, for the airline industry going forward? Obviously, oil, the price of oil looms large over the whole thing, but what other major headwinds or tailwinds do you see?
Well, the biggest headwind is just taking care of the people flying, making sure that you and our listeners are being treated professionally and with care. And I think that's the big headwind for them and how they do that, because every negative statement has been costly to them, but it's been our benefit. But it's recognized that. For tailwind, I just think it's global trade. We have to take a look at global trade. And when you look at America, 2 million people fly every day in America. And it's very difficult to build a new airport. The cost, the regulations, etc. So the airlines industry and the airports, they have a moat around this industry, and that's why Warren Buffett's come in and taken a major position in the four airlines. And one we forgot about was Southwest Airlines, and you're going to probably see them expand globally at a much more rapid rate like they've done through the Caribbean. So I think that it's very positive.
Frank, quick question here about what's going on there in Washington regarding the air traffic controllers. A lot of rhetoric on this. Is this a positive or a negative for the airline industry?
I think it's a positive. And I think the big push is that they have very antiquated technology, and it's trying to take it out of the hands of Congress and put it into hands of a free market system that would have state-of-the-art, so that you have less delays in flying and you have better technology to prevent accidents, et cetera. So when you talk to the CEOs of the major four airlines, they will talk to you about how antiquated the technology is at the airports. And this is a way to get around it. So it's positive.
We're on the line with Frank Holmes, the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors. Frank, I want to ask you about your new product, another gold ETF.
I'm so excited about it because It was my first love, and I've written books on the subject on gold stocks, and I've won with my team many, many awards for best of breed as active fund managers. And I continue to see the uberization of active gold funds, even though if we outperform the GDXJ, money just wants to go to an ETF. So we've invested several years of 8,000 hours in understanding our successes and modeling it. And they call that sort of artificial intelligence to take your tacit learning and then trying to write mathematical models and look for patterns. And we've done it. I'm thrilled about it. This new product will outperform the GDX and GDXJ 95% of the time in rolling 12-month periods. It falls less and it rises higher. And it's a unique model that has three of the major royalty companies. And we love the royalty companies because they have massive profit margin. Like, what would you rather buy, Newmont or Franco Nevada? Franco Nevada has $20 million of revenue per employee, and Newmont is almost $300,000 of revenue per employee. I mean, it's a mathematical, massive difference. So the royalty companies enjoy rising price to book value, whereas most of the gold mining stocks have taken it on the chin. When gold fell from 1900 down to 1100, the percentage decline was massive for the Newmonts of the world, but it was modest for the royalty companies.
So Frank,
can you go ahead?
Yeah, I was going to jump in and say, what exactly is unique about the way the fund invests as compared? There's so many gold ETFs out there. So what's unique about GoAU?
Well, the gold ETFs that are out there are basically just asset aggregators of stocks, gold stocks. There's no thought process which separates good from bad. And they've been very successful. And in fact, the GDXJ has been actually now disruptive. They brought in $5 billion for small mid-cap gold stocks, and they became too big faster than the market grew. And now they're blowing out $3 billion worth of juniors and small-cap gold stocks, which has really hurt the industry. This is not going to get caught up with that. This is going to look for those factors that are good corporate governance, that are looking for the momentum in revenue, the consistency in rising price to book value, profit margins, the factors that we found give you better stock picking.
And why do you characterize this as a lower risk mining investment?
Because it gets rid of high debt stocks. It focuses on those companies that have higher profit margins, gross and net margins. It's looking for those companies which have rising price to book. It's funny, but the narrative for the gold industry has always been NAV, net asset value, determined by a discount rate. And everyone's got a different discount rate, where when it comes to book value, it's always consistent. And in fact, rising price to book is what drives and attracts quant funds. And quant funds today are 60% of all the stock trading. So what do they look for when they go and pick stocks? And you know, their time horizon is very short. Ours is longer, but they look for a set of factors which we've been able to model, and it's embedded. Now, we still have to have an analyst full-time monitoring the stocks that are picking every quarter and making sure it's following the system, because you can get what they call data. You have to scrub the data because there's always glitches in pulling the data. If you pull data from Bloomberg, it's going to give you a different outcome if you pull it from FactSet. If you pull it from Wanda. So it's important that it's not just a black box, but you still have to have an analyst managing it.
All right. Now I got to get a little fundamental here with you, Frank. I mean, as of right now, as of the current numbers, we have no sense of inflation, right? I mean, the Fed is really jawboning on whether they're going to take rates up or not. So in a low inflation, low, you know, interest rate environment, you know, why bother with gold?
Great question. There's two things that drive the price of gold. One is the fear trade, which we focus on in North America and in Europe, and the other is the love trade. A love trade is just basically families buying gold for their families during difficult times. All the boat people that got to Vietnam, those are first to get out had gold. You see that India is a cultural affinity. They buy gold. The other part is this fear trade. You know what's happening, interesting enough, for the fear trade? We have negative real interest rates. So you're right, interest rates are low, but the government is trying to ask you to buy their 10-year government bond or their 5-year government bond or their 2-year government bond, and you're going to lock in a loss. So anytime that's happened, gold starts to outperform in that country's currency. And how do you make that determination? You take whatever the government's saying, I'm going to pay you 210 basis points to buy my 10-year government bond, but inflation's running at 220. So that means you're losing money. So therefore, and it resets every month. And why not just buy good dividend-paying stocks like the Franco-Nevadas, or you buy a royal this type of an ETF, which sorts out those stocks that have strong cash flow that pay dividends.
Okay, so if a young investor comes up to you, Frank, and says, you know what, I'm not going to bother with gold or the stock market. I'm going to put my money in Bitcoin or Ethereum. What would your response be?
You know what? That's a great, great question, because I went to the coin conference that was in New York last month, and I was just blown away by it, and it fascinated me. It's to me, it's the most significant source of crowdfunding outside of any regulatory arm in the world. Bitcoin is decentralized. It's much to me more like gold in respect that it's gold is the fourth most liquid asset class in the world, and it functions against each country's currency. And negative real interest rates or positive interest rates are the key factor. So does the Bitcoins of the world. And I think that when you look at some smart people that I really respect, that they've taken a position, and it's very difficult to buy. And you can go, actually, when you have Bitcoins, you can buy a Surface from Microsoft. You can buy Dell computers. So it is being used in commerce quite a bit. And I think that it's an alternative to gold investors, but you can't wear it, and it doesn't look good. You strap it around your neck and your waist, and then you give it to your wife, and she's going to laugh at you. But you know what? You give it to your loved one, a piece of gold jewelry, and they remember it.
Frank, one more, and then we'll let you get out of here. But you're the CEO of U.S. Global Investors. You guys have mutual funds and ETFs and other investment products. Very interesting time for the investment community right now with, it seems like, the shift towards passive investing. And I think I read that in the next decade, passive, in terms of assets under management, passive will overtake active for the first time ever. So thoughts on kind of the future of that and how U.S. Global Investors is sort of positioned for that.
That's another wonderful question. There's no doubt passive has grown rapidly. And the flaw in that whole ointment is that the cheapest is best. And it's just not. But right now, it's self-fulfilling. Like we saw with the GDX and GDXJ, money's just going into an index, and it becomes driving up those stock prices. But what's really evolving now is smart beta, intelligent, artificial intelligence type of thought process towards these indexes. And I think that that's where you're actually getting faster growth than just a plain vanilla index based on market cap.
And
like
so
GoAU, and it's like Jets. Jets is a they call it beta 2 because of the portfolio structure, and also how it picks the stocks. It's done everything it said it would do. And on our 10-year regression analysis, Jets has done exactly what it's going to do, and I believe that Go Gold is going to do the same thing. If you're going to look for gold and gold stocks, this is a very rational, intelligent way to play it.
All right. Frank Holmes, CEO, CIO of U.S. Global Investors. Frank, thanks a lot for stopping by today.
Well, thank you. Have a wonderful...
I just cut him off there. Sorry about that, Frank, but it's 8:49, and we got to get back to the market. Guys, what's going on?
Smart guy there, you know, and just, I don't know. I mean, gold is always something that I've, you know, thought about having in my portfolio, in and out. And I don't know. I mean, everyone hates it now. Maybe it's a time to take a look at it. Dennis, see any change in the imbalances here? I noticed we got a little bump in the S&Ps. We're trading at 22.31.5. We started to show up at 24.33.75.
Yeah, just looking. No, they're all pretty much the same. We've got some small. They've grown a little bit here in size, but still, the standouts are the ones I listed earlier, like GE, 188,000 to buy there, Ford, 120,000 to sell. But they're pretty small. The one thing is, I just wanted to cover a couple other ratings changes there because we didn't get to them all. And then I just want to quickly talk before we close the show about the Russell rebalance, which is at the close today, and that's going to have some massive movement on some of your smaller cap stocks. But one we didn't cover, VRTX in ratings land, that is catching an upgrade at Needham here. VRTX, again, a lot of these pharmaceutical companies have really been taking off. VRTX is no exception. Had the gap and go, I believe, from, well, I don't know if that was the earnings back in March, but continue to fly here. It's now up another $2 here this morning. These biotechs, man, they are just flying.
All right, VRTX, not an all-time high, but let's count how many three up days in a row, trading up $1.47 here at 137 even. 137.26, that was a high from yesterday. That's something you're going to have to contend with early in the session. So if you get that, potential skies ahead. You see 137 was a level back in August of 2015. And then, man, this has to be one of the biotechs that is close to its all-time high as any. All-time highs way up at 143.45.
Yeah, it's funny we talk about the biotech rally, but even when you have the biotech rally, they have been hurt so much in the last couple of years that there's a lot of them are still significantly off the highs. I mean, you can look at a Biogen itself, which is catching the initiation out of buy at Deutsche Bank here today, trading up a couple of points on that. But, you know, it's been an incredible run in the last 3-4 days, 250 to 280. But, you know, so it's nice, up 10-12%. But when you really put it in perspective, I mean, you even look on the weeklies, this looks like nothing. You look out on the monthlies, this stock back when everybody had to own all the biotech stocks in March of 2015 was $480, so it's 280, so it's still deeply discounted there, which is interesting when you say a VRTX, because that's come all the way back almost to the highs that we had in 2015. Celgene's approaching those highs, so there's a few that are close, but, you know, there's a lot of them that are still significantly off the highs. So what do you think of Big Pharma here? So we've really been focusing on biotech, but pharma's caught a rally here too. I mean, look at Merck the last 4 days, 63 to 66. I mean, this is one of your biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. Not really a growth stock. It's more like a staple. And, you know, you talk about, you know, dividend 2.85%. Big move for Merck the last three or four days. I do have this one in my investment portfolio. I've had it in there for about a decade. Sticking with it.
Trading range really going back to February, finding support in the 61 handle, and then the recent high of the move was or the recent high for the year was 66.80, last print 66.37. So big kind of range bound. Maybe if you can get it in the upper 66s, could be the top of the range here. Once again, things going on in Washington, maybe having some of an effect on these stocks. I noticed Pfizer caught a nice bid. I mean, $2.50 in a couple weeks. So yeah. Pfizer, but then
look at this one, Dr. J saying Bristol Myers.
BMY. You had that one for a while, didn't you?
I had it for like a day and I was like, I'm too early. And then I sold. So I was stuck in my investment portfolio. And then it was like not looking that good. I actually took a small loss. I was like, I'm too early. Bought it right after the swoosh. And then I did some homework that night. And I was like, you know what? Valuation stuff still doesn't make sense. So I bought it like $63 and sold it like, it was like 62. I lost like a point maybe. Maybe I didn't even lose. Actually, I don't even know if I lost on it. But I had an investment account, not even for a day, like just for a few hours. And I was like, you know what? I don't like it. It was a good sell, obviously, because the stock continued lower since then. Wish I would have bought it under 50, though. When it got under 50, I think, you know, the value was there. So, you know, and these obviously aren't big growth stocks now. You talk some of these smaller biotech stocks, they're all about growth. These are more, you know, about, you know, these are, you know, value, more value stocks.
All right. Just shorter term, let's keep an eye on the high from yesterday, 57.90, maybe a big seller lurking up at the whole number of 58. If you go out on the longer term charts, though, things kind of open up between 58 and 59. Maybe you can find some things on your daily chart to correspond to those levels. But man, oh man, this just put a double bottom in earlier this month at 51, 63, and 56, and now trading up in the $57 handle bulb. So big moves in normally quiet stocks.
Marco's in the chat asking us for sectors to look for next week. Hard to say here yet. I mean, we, you know, I've been talking beating the drum on biotech. I feel like it's kind of, you know, a little bit late to the party there now. The other consideration here is we have the Russell rebalance. And I will tell you, on Russell days, it can sometimes be a turn in the overall market as well. Sometimes you just see, you know, maybe everybody's got to get in or get out. But I'm going to post the link over in the chat here for the ads and deletes. You can actually just go right here. So I'm posting it into the chat. If you want, just if anybody's listening and they're following me on Twitter, I can tweet it out as well if you want. But the Russell reconstitution is tonight after the bell. So basically, you've got stocks that are going into the index and then coming out of the index. So traditionally, you know, you would think, well, the ads are going to be going higher and the deletes are going to be going lower. But I'll tell you, I've traded the Russell a lot of years, and I actually don't trade it anymore because I've been burned a few times too. I got burned really hard there a few years ago, and I'm kind of like just hands off on the Russell just because I still trade it somewhat, but I don't trade it like I used to construct a portfolio, and I would basically be short the deletes and long the ads ahead of the, you know, the rebalance. But it's so gamed now. There's so much going on because you know what's going in and going out. So a lot of times you'll see like these reversals happen where trades get crowded. And, you know, just because they're getting deleted doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go down. If they're crowded, they could actually go up if everybody's already short the thing. So funny things happen. So I'll trade them like at the close, like just, you know, for day trades. But I don't construct a portfolio ahead of time anymore like I used to, where I'd have a whole bunch of deletes, you know, that I was short and a whole bunch of ads that I was long for like months on end, you know, just waiting, you know. And then you say, how do you know? You know, well, you don't always know what the stock's going to be. They only announced it a couple weeks before. Well, you can figure it out because it's all market cap weighted. So, you know, when you're really doing your homework, you can kind of figure out what's going in and what's coming out. But funny things happen on it, so you got to be careful when you're trading these things. All I'm going to do is, you know, if you don't know anything about this, it's okay. Just a word of caution, if you're trading any small caps at, you know, any time today, really, and especially after 3 o'clock, there's going to be some sizable moves in these things at the close because of institutional rebalancing here.
Could you give us just one or two that are going in and one or two that are coming out just to see if we could find
Let's go look here. So, okay, I just clicked the ads link. So I posted it over in the chat, but I'm just clicking on my own page here. So there's a PDF file when you click on the ads. So we can look at 2017 ads. So this is what's going into the Russell 3000. I'm just going right off the top of the list. First stock on the list is ABEO. That is going into the index. So, and, you know, well, look, yesterday I actually started to catch it, but that's biotech. So maybe it's a bad example. All biotech was getting bid. AKAO is another one's going in. You can see it's had a huge move, you know, and that's why the, when the market cap weighted, they're going to go in like that. So it's all the charts are kind of going to look similar to a certain extent over the last year, because that's why they're going into the index, because they performed well. So their market cap has come up enough to be able to go into the index. ARD, well, that's a BAS, Basic Energy Services. That's going in. That's not actually the chart. That's actually got a pretty ugly chart there. But that thing just came out, it looks like, at the beginning of 2017. So it's probably added just because that stock was has only been out for 6 months.
All right. And then he deletes?
Yeah, let's go look. So I'll go click the deletes link there. So just looking at the deletes. And the file is popping up here right now, PDF file. Right at the top of it is ACRX, which is a pharmaceutical company, which possibly might have got a lift. But you can see in the last year, the stock has underperformed, and that's probably why it's coming out of the index. Avon Products, there's one you know. AVP is coming out. It's a delete. So, you know, naturally you would think, well, deletes are going to be sold here at the close. But I'll tell you, funny things happen, although that shirt's setting up to not look that great. So, moral of the story is just because they're getting deleted doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go down tonight. So that's all I want to say, is because a lot of people just randomly short all the deletes, and sometimes they'll get burned pretty hard. I've been burned playing it that way. There's more to it. These trades do get crowded, and sometimes they do reverse on the last day or two.
Right, and just all the managers that are using that as a benchmark need to model their portfolio so they are forced, whether they have the stocks in there or not, to either buy or sell. Just a quick response here to Marcos, who was looking for individual sectors. I'm just going to make some general comments in the S&Ps here. And wow, what a quiet week. I mean, there's really no way to put it. We hit that all-time high on Monday at 24.51.50 and posted the all-time closing high that day at 24.47.5. And we haven't been any lower than 24.28. So, I mean, tight ranges here. Been trading in this area for, a little over the past week. So, range bound, need to get up and clear that all-time high for cleaner skies. And man, oh man, who knows when we're ever going to have a correction in this market. Spencer, you want to preview the show, wrap up today's show and preview the show for next
week? Real quick question from Dr. J. Does the rebalance happen right before the close or at the closing prints?
The stocks go in at the close, so that's when they're actually going into the index, you know, so they'll be, you know, marked from, you know, basically those prices. But you have, you know, obviously the funds that are tracking that are going to be jockeying right before the close and probably on the closing print as well. You have a lot that just want to mark them to the close. So you'll see action on these things all day, though. So the action isn't always going to be just right on the closing print. You'll see, you know, some people jumping the gun and probably trying to get the stocks ahead of time too. So, or the ads or deletes or so. So you will see some pretty violent moves on the close itself, but you will also see some pretty violent moves ahead of the close.
All right. That's it for our show today. Looking ahead to next week, we've got Chris Kimball from Kimball Charting Solutions, Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. He's one of our favorite guests. Nick Shaheen will be on the show. Ivan Feinseth, Mike Bellafiore. So we've got a pretty good slate of guests for you next week. But that's it for us this week. So hope you enjoyed our chat with Frank Holmes. You can find more Pre-Market Prep on our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. The show is also on YouTube on the Benzinga TV YouTube channel. We're also on Facebook at Benzinga and Twitter at Benzinga as well. So like us and follow us on there. Don't forget about Benzinga Pro. Trade faster, trade smarter with Benzinga Pro. That is our show for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed all of our guests and all of our chatting and charts and everything. But have a good rest of your day. Good luck out there today. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you folks on Monday.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.